Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Live from MMA Fighting Studios, this is Between the Links. And now, your host, Mike Heck.
Yes, it is great to hear the iconic voice of Esther Lynn once again as we welcome you to a special live edition of Between the Links. I am excited to be back in video form this week following the UFC 266 press conference. We have a lot to discuss ahead of Saturday's card in Las Vegas. We have quite the matchup for you this week. So let's introduce the combatants first. It's a big show, so you wanted to bring in a heavy hitter. So we're bringing in one of the top 15 ranked fighters in one of the UFC's best and deepest divisions. So we have Cody Stamann joining us this week as the challenger. Cody, thank you for doing this, man. How are you?
I'm good. The challenger. Am I going to be challenged on this show?
Oh, we'll see. I mean, according to the champion, you will be challenged like never before. And that man is back once again to defend his crown. He is on some roll right now. He is Mr. No Gray Area himself, and he is excited to deliver his fiery hot takes about UFC 266 and beyond. And that's probably an understatement. From MMAfighting.com, once again, the champ, Jed Meshew. Hello, Jed.
I love this nickname that you've given me, Mr. No Gray Area. I think it's fantastic. I don't like the opponent you've given me. I've been asking for Colby Covington, and I get Cody Stamann. I get it. They're both accomplished wrestlers who are really good at fighting. It's not the same, Mike. I'm here to destroy one man, and now I got to put this other dude in the box so I can make my way to the thing I'm trying to get after.
Oh, I think I misheard you. I thought you said Cody Stamann. So I gotta do
it's
a better
okay.
job.
It'll be a speed bump on my journey, just straight to the moon, Mike. Straight to the moon.
Well, I'm glad Cody is here. Cody is one of my favorites to interview and chat with. So this is going to be a little more relaxed setting for Cody Stamann on this side. But let's get right into this thing. Let's begin with the biggest story of the week. And the biggest story of UFC 266, for better or for worse, it is the return of one Nick Diaz. He is scheduled to face Robbie Lawler in a 5-round non-title rematch in a featured spot on Saturday's card, and things have been interesting this week. First, we found out the fight is being moved from a welterweight bout to a middleweight bout. This is on the Diaz side from all accounts. He no-shows the media day, which isn't all that surprising. Then he does this interview with Brett Okamoto, which had a lot of people talking about one of the reasons about the move to 185, so he doesn't fight the same guys his brother. Nate fights at 170. Then he said he could beat Kamaru Usman right now, that he has a better shot of beating Usman than Lawler because he already beat Lawler, but that was 17 years ago. And Diaz himself hasn't fought in over 6 years. It's just classic Nick Diaz fight week stuff. But that interview was just classic Diaz, and this has been a classic Nick Diaz just whole show throughout this build to this fight. It just is what it is. So Cody, I'm going to begin with you. This return, this fight, what Nick Diaz has been saying, the things that have happened this week. What are your thoughts on all this? Are you excited? Are you concerned? Where are you at with this?
I mean, I'm concerned for Nick Diaz's health mentally, just because the things he's saying don't make any sense whatsoever. He's literally contradicting himself in the same sentence. He talked about how scared he is and how much he doesn't enjoy any part of this. That was like the only honest thing I think that came out of his mouth. I don't think that he enjoys fighting, otherwise he probably would have been around. at one point or another in the last 6 years. And, you know, for me, Nick Diaz, I just don't think that he's the type of athlete that can come back after a six-year layoff. Is he entertaining? Do I want to watch him fight? Of course. Like, I'm a Diaz fan. It's hard not to be. But do I think that he's going to, you know, bring a level to MMA that of Nick Diaz that we haven't seen before? Absolutely not. I think that we're going to see a washed down version of what he used to be. I don't think that he even took any of the shit seriously. I'm just telling by him not minding to cut weight, you know, going up 15 pounds. That's because he's not prepared. I mean, I looked at him and it didn't look like he was in shape. Didn't look like he was ready to fight. It looked like he was barely training. I mean, the guys do triathlons, but that's not a fight. Like, that's, you know, that's a multiple hour thing. Like, fighting is a lot harder than I think a triathlon would be.
Jed, you have been very consistent about your thoughts in regards to this Diaz return. We're a little over 48 hours from when he's scheduled to make the walk. I'd ask you your thoughts about his fight week in general and everything else that was put on the table, but I feel like your response to that will probably go hand in hand with everything you've been saying. So I will phrase it this way. Nick Diaz, no shows the media day, everything that's happened. He did show up at the press conference. He had a bit of a positive attitude. But do you feel any differently about this Nick Diaz return on this Thursday night than you did a few weeks, a few months, a few years ago?
No. First, I'd like to congratulate Cody, because oftentimes we get fighters on the show and they won't just come out with throwing darts. And he didn't pull any punches, so I respect that. You've already earned my respect, Cody. I'm still going to box you up, so don't worry about it. But yeah, no, I'm not changing my mind at all. I've said it several times in this program. I won't believe Nick Diaz is fighting again until 3 days after the event. When I wake up on Tuesday morning and I can go check MMAfighting.com, where you can get all your UFC 266 coverage, and I see, oh, Nick Diaz lost to Robbie Lawler by fourth round TKO because of a cut, then I'll be like, oh, wow, he actually fought again. I can't believe it. This dude is the premier seller of Wolf tickets in the sport, which is ironic given that he coined the term in general. And I'm going to be honest, I felt great all week, because boy howdy was I going to let everybody know if Diaz botched this up with the weight cut shenanigans and was like, yeah, you know what, if we can't do it at 185, I'm not going to fight. I would have felt so fantastic. You would have never gotten me to shut up on this program, because I've been saying it for months. I don't think this fight's going to happen. At this point, I don't want it to happen. I echo a lot of the sentiments Cody just said, because I was a little intrigued. If I was buying into the bit, I would be intrigued to see Nick Diaz come back, because he is a captivating personality. And I actually think the Robbie Lawler fight should make sense on paper. But everything that's happened this week, I'm still standing firm on the he's not fighting. As something's going to interrupt in the next 48 hours, be that by hook or by crook. I just don't think it's going down. But I don't want it to go down anymore. I don't feel like Nick's heart is in this. I don't feel like his heart was ever in it, because he said many times he did not love fighting. And I'm not sure what his motivations are to come back at this point. But everything that I've seen from him this week does not make me look forward to the fight that won't happen with anticipation.
Jed, as people know, you're not a guy who likes to deal with hypotheticals all that often, especially when it comes to Nick Diaz. You're Mr. No Gray Area, after all. But let's get you out of the comfort zone a little bit. Let's stay positive, all right? Let's just say this fight goes forward. Let's just say Tuesday you wake up, you go to MMAfighting.com, you read the recap of this fight. Both guys made the walk. Bruce Buffer does the intros. Referee gets them going, and they fight, and you read it Tuesday. What are you expecting the headline to read? What are you expecting the recap to look like? Like, how does this fight play out in your eyes should it happen on Saturday? Which, in this situation, it's gonna, because we're positive right now.
In this very unlikely hypothetical, I originally felt that Nick was actually well positioned against Robbie if I was playing the possibilities game, because Robbie's really old now. He's one of my favorite fighters ever. I have nothing but love for Robbie Lawler and what he accomplished. But frankly, he won the welterweight title when he was already on a bit of a decline. Like, his fights were extremely tactical, the way he would set kind of measure his energy output. He would explode at the beginning and ends of rounds and make sure he was he could fight all the way through five. We saw that against Condit. We saw that against Hendricks. Like, that's how he won the Hendricks rematch, was basically taking the middle of every round off and exploding in the last minute, because that left a big impactful mark in the judge's eyes. And I don't feel like that would work against, certainly not a prime Nick Diaz. Would be awful. And I even think if you could get 50% of Nick Diaz, his forward pressure, his relentless onslaught of quote unquote pitter pat punches, like, I think that's really lined up well against sort of where Robbie Lawler is, even if Nick Diaz is half the fighter he once was. But I don't even know if that's true anymore. Like, I don't know if Nick's even coming in as half the fighter he once was. So I got to think that Lawler is – I mean, Lawler's been fighting and he's had some time off, and he's had a few more losses than he would have preferred lately. But he's still one of the smartest fighters that you'll ever see. He has a wide depth of knowledge about how to fight and how to win rounds when necessary. And I think he's – everything from Nick totally dissuaded me from feeling good about picking him this week. If I were to pick him, because again, the fight's not happening.
Cody, what do you expect? what do you expect, Cody? I mean, Diaz Lawler, 17 years later. I mean, I've watched that first fight a million times at this point. To see these guys on a poster getting ready, and seeing these guys at a press conference talking about fighting each other, like, it's kind of surreal to see. But they're going to run it back on Saturday for potentially 25 minutes. Like, what kind of fight are you expecting to see, especially with the concern that you seem to be feeling towards the Diaz camp?
I mean, honestly, this is so hard because these guys are, in their day, they were great. And, this is maybe, when my career's coming to an end, someone's going to say it's about me. But honestly, I'm probably going to go take a shit while they're fighting, because, like, I don't see anything exciting happening in this fight. I really don't think either one of them are going to bring, a hostile game to the table. I think it's going to be very calculated. They're going to try to do absolutely nothing. If you watch Nick's last fight, I mean, the guy did absolutely nothing. Robbie hasn't had the same output. I think this is going to be one of those fights where there's literally 10 punches landed combined in every round, and everyone's just kind of like, what the hell is going on, honestly. Either that, or they try to get it over within the first minute of the fight, which I highly doubt happens. But, I mean, like, in a perfect world, that's what I'd want to see, is, like, these guys just try to close the deal in the first 2 minutes. But I don't think that's what we're going to see. I think we're going to see a 25-minute snooze fest that isn't going to be a fan favorite fight. You know, this isn't a fight that I'm necessarily looking forward to on this card.
Can we talk very briefly? Cody, how long are your shits? This is 25 minutes, man. What's up with your diet?
I'm going to take my time, man. I'm going to take my time.
I'll be looking at Instagram. Your diet, bro.
Words with friends.
30 minutes. You get the minute in between rounds, too. I mean, that's... Woo. You're doing battle in there. You know what you're doing.
Yeah. I might take a bath, too. I know.
Well, we shall see what happens to this fight. Cody will not see what happens to this fight because he'll be spending some time in the bathroom. But Jed doesn't think it'll happen. We'll see. But let's talk about the two title fights. But before we do, the point for round one goes to... I think we have a new Mr. No Gray Area. Cody Stamen, just being honest and throwing the heaters, is on the board.
Came to play.
He came to play. Brian Kelleher, take notes, dude. Take some notes from Cody Stamen, your fellow 135er. So following Diaz Lawler 2, should it happen, Jed Meshew, we have two world title fights to look forward to on Saturday night in Las Vegas. We have the women's flyweight title on the line. Valentina Shevchenko defends against Lauren Murphy. We'll talk about that in a moment. But the main event is for the featherweight title. Alexander Volkanovski defends against Brian Ortega. A really interesting matchup. One, quite frankly, this is one of the more completely under the radar, underappreciated fights of the entire year on paper, because it's buried. It's lost to the Diaz storyline. But Jed, we're going to start with you. We got Volkanovski versus Ortega. This fight has dealt with COVID-19, a season of The Ultimate Fighter, some sort of trash talk between the two guys, and we're finally here. So what sticks out to you about this fight between Volkanovski, the champion, versus Ortega, the challenger, and not to mention Ortega being one of your favorite fighters on the roster right now?
Well, what sticks out to me primarily is that Alexander Volkanovski might actually just be the best fighter in the world right now. I know he's at the top, or like in that top five pound for pound rankings, but really it's totally possible that he is actually deserves the number one spot right now. He is extremely good by any definition, and Brian Ortega sucks. So this should be pretty clear on who's going to win, because one fighter is great and one fighter sucks. I have made my opinions about Brian Ortega extremely clear on this program and others. He is really good at winning fights, and he is really bad at winning moments of fights. So in every fight other than the last one, he beat the Korean Zombie from pillar to post, and that was a huge uptick for him, because every other fight he's ever had, he was getting the boots put to him, and then he just finished it. And that's not a knock per se on Ortega, because that is a legitimate skill. Like, Yoel Romero is honestly much the same way, and Romero is one of my favorite fighters. You know this, best middleweight in the world. But Ortega, I don't know. I don't like him as much as Yoel. Maybe it's because he's not an alien from another planet that's meant to make us all feel bad about how we look. But, yeah, that's my overriding thought there is that. However, because I'm so mean to Brian Ortega so often, I will say I think that this is the most interesting test for Volkanovski, and vice versa. I think Volkanovski beat the hell out of him, honestly. But – I think Volkanovski's greatest strength is his fight IQ is through the roof. Like, if you, however you scored the rematch with Max Holloway, the reality is Holloway did a great job of adjusting from fight one to fight two, but Volkanovski adjusted in the middle of that fight, which is something you rarely see in general, and you certainly don't see somebody damn good like Max Holloway is. And Volkanovski realized, like, oh, I'm losing because he's made these adjustments. Here's how I need to now approach the fight. In real time. And I've written about Volkanovski a lot. I always compare him to the house, like in Vegas. He is the casino. And if you play the game long enough with him, just you're just going to lose. The numbers are on his side. He adjusts so well. He has such a depth of skill and ability. And his IQ is just through the roof. So the way you beat him is not going to be – like Max Holloway, maybe he won the last fight, maybe he didn't. If they fight 100 times, I just don't think Max can beat him more than a handful. Ortega is the kind of guy who can beat it, because the way you beat the house is you go all in on one, you know, one really big hand of blackjack or whatever. And Ortega doesn't win rounds for shit, but he wins fights. And so maybe Ortega can magic his way into a guillotine or force a grappling scramble and get something locked up there or flying knee him. But outside of that, I don't see it. And I frankly don't see anybody in the division who can beat this man, other than Ortega doing something really wild. So it's really compelling in that regard. But again, Ortega sucks. Volk is great. Volk by decision.
Cody, your thoughts on this title fight and why it isn't being talked about more? Because in my opinion, kind of like Jed said, I think Volkanovski is extremely underrated as a champion. I felt that he's been underrated his entire UFC career. But Ortega, one thing about Volkanovski that has struck me this week, and even throughout the build of the fight, Volkanovski has prided himself on doing things the right way, the martial arts way, not trash talking, just being nice, being respectful. Hasn't really been that way in this fight. He's taking shots at Ortega at every chance he gets. Interviews, appearances, on Tough. It's just un-Volkanovski-like in the build of this fight. And Ortega, not really buying into it, seems to be supremely confident heading in. He's got that look in his eye. I love this fight. What say you? Like, what sticks out to you about it, Cody?
Well, I think Volk is just realizing that he's got to start playing the game. I think that's a point that we all come to. We're like, hey, you know, at some point we got to start being assholes. We have to trash talk. Like, this is how you get attention in this sport. This is how people give a shit about what you're going to do on Saturday night. But I have to 100% agree with Jed. I mean, I think Volkanovski is better in every single way. I think Ortega is one of those guys that literally always has a puncher's chance. But I mean, based on the fights, you know, with the common denominator that is Max Holloway, I mean, Max Holloway absolutely beat the shit out of Brian Ortega. Brian Ortega didn't stand a chance in that fight. It's one of the most lopsided fights I've seen in a long time at that high of a level. And, you know, the fight with Volkanovski was very competitive. Volkanovski, like Jed said, he made in-fight adjustments, and that is, like, literally one of the hardest things to do as an athlete, to be able to understand that things aren't going your way and be able to formulate a plan while someone's trying to hurt you and make adjustments like that. I mean, Volkanovski is going to be a really, really tough guy to beat, especially in a five-round fight. You know, I think the longer a fight goes on, the worse it is for whoever he's fighting, because he just starts to figure you out and he starts to chip away at you. And it's nothing big. He doesn't do things. He's not taking big risks in fights. Everything's very, very calculated. He's always in good position. His stance is always perfect. He's going to be a really hard guy to land a big shot on or jump a guillotine on, because he doesn't really make those mistakes in fights. I mean, that's why he has such a clean record, and that's why he is where he is. And, you know, 45 is an absolute stacked division. I mean, these are two of the, you know, I think, honestly, for me, I think they're two of the pound-for-pound best guys in the world. I think, you know, the guys in the lighter weights are a lot more skilled than the guys in the heavier weights. I just think there's way more depth if you look at, like, you know, 35, 45, 55. I think those are the, you know, the core of the fighting weight classes. That's where you're going to get the most talented athletes, the most skilled athletes, the most evolved athletes. And I think, you know, we're going to see two of the best guys do it. But Volkanovski, I just don't see how anyone beats him. You know what I mean? You can't take him down. If he takes you down, his pressure is perfect. If he gets in trouble, he just backs out. The guy is he's a whiz in the cage. He knows exactly how to win. He reminds me of almost like a little like knows exactly what he has to do to win rounds, to win a fight, and everything is very, very calculated. Like, and he's, I'm not saying he's not a powerful guy. Like, he can't put you out, but he's not even trying to hit guys hard. He's trying to score points and run up the numbers. And, you know, once he figures you out and starts getting ahead, like, nobody can catch him.
Mike, you want to know a fun stat?
I would love it. Yeah. I would love to know a fun stat.
So Holloway versus Ortega, Holloway landed 290 strikes against Ortega in four rounds. In the 10 rounds he has fought Alexander Volkanovski, he landed 236. He fought Volkanovski for 10 rounds and landed less than he did when he tuned up Ortega.
Just fascinating numbers right there. And I think Holloway's probably waiting in the wings for either of these guys. If Ortega wins, it's a no-brainer. I know Volkanovski, you know, I beat the guy twice, but I just think that's the biggest fight he can have right now, is running it back a third time with Holloway. So if I'm Holloway, I know there's rumors he's fighting Yair. From all accounts, that fight is not done. It's not even close to being done. And if I'm Max Holloway, I ain't signing to fight anybody right now until we find out what happens in that fight. So that's the main event. Co-main event, we have Valentina Shevchenko defending her flyweight title against Lauren Murphy. Right now, according to DK Nation, Shevchenko is a minus 1,500 favorite. Some sites have her as high as a minus 2,000 favorite. Comeback on Lauren Murphy is plus 850. But here's something that I thought was kind of interesting. The odds makers and bettors may not believe in Lauren Murphy to pull off an upset and win the title, but they seem to believe in Murphy's durability and toughness, because the odds that this fight goes the distance is plus 175, which with this line, a lot of people feel like that line should be much higher than it is. But be that as it may, let me ask this, Cody. Can Lauren Murphy go in there with this career resurgence and pull off one of, if not the biggest upsets in UFC history on Saturday?
I think anything's possible. Would I put my hard-earned money on the table? Absolutely no way. I mean, I think the odds makers have it right. I think this is a pretty lopsided fight. I think they're pretty desperate to get people for that flyweight title. That's probably the shallowest division in all of MMA at this point. I mean, you have one girl that's literally standing on top of the mountain, and she's just kicking everyone that comes anywhere near it off with relative ease. I would like to see someone come up and be a real challenge, but I don't really see that happening this weekend.
Jed, the Chevy truck. The Chevy truck, that's what you call it, right? You've been the driver of said truck for a long time now. And who knows? There may come a day where a flyweight comes along and stops that truck. A lot of people believe that will never happen. But can it happen on Saturday, Jed? Are you giving Lauren Murphy any chance to win this fight?
No, I don't believe in miracles. I have been driving the Chevy truck since day one. I am the conductor of the bullet train. And that line is too low. Like, she could be a minus 10,000 favorite. And I don't mean this as disrespect to Lauren Murphy at all, because Lauren Murphy is a really good fighter. Lauren Murphy deserves this title fight. Like, she has done everything right. She has put together the win. She stacked up 5 in a row, I think. Like, she is a very deserving challenger. And there's nothing wrong with her getting her day in the office. Like, she gets her chance. And that is what this sport is supposed to be about. But there are levels, and Valentina Shevchenko is on another planet from everybody else in her division and even near her division. For my money, she's the best fighter in the world if you're just looking at comparison to their peers. And you can't explain to me how, outside of a freak injury, Lauren Murphy can win the fight. She is not nearly as good a striker. She is not nearly as good a grappler. She is not nearly as good a wrestler. She is not physically in the same stratosphere. There's just no area where she can go or implement a game plan that's going to work, as far as I can tell. Like, I think Shevchenko is, again, I have a lot of respect for Lauren Murphy. I think she's a top 5 fighter in her division. I think Shevchenko is just so much better. It doesn't matter. And to Cody's point, I mean, we want to see challenges. We all thought Jessica Andrade was going to be a challenge. Like, everybody thought, and the line was way closer. I think Shevchenko was only like a minus 250 favorite or something like that. Everybody thought Andrade could maybe do something. She, you know, competed at bantamweight and was physically impressive there. And Shevchenko just ran through her. Like, she is so much better at everything. And I think the best Lauren Murphy can hope for is to make it to a decision. But I don't even think that's likely. Like, if she really wants to shell up and play all defense, maybe. But as tough and hard-nosed as Lauren Murphy is, I think at any point in time, Shevchenko can just take her down and get to top crucifix and beat the hell out of her. Like, there's just no way around this one as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, it's not a fight that you're going to be enthused about, but this is a great fight for Shevchenko's legacy, and I will always sign up to watch the best fighter in the world fight, and for my money, that's Shevchenko.
I had a feeling that was coming. Shevchenko actually closed against Andrade as a minus 555 favorite.
Really?
Jessica Andrade. It opened as a minus 335.
What world do we live in where, you know, you're a minus 550 and that's like a close odd? Those odds are close for you in a title fight. You know what I mean? Like, that's insane. That doesn't happen in like men's divisions. You know, maybe, you know, plus 150, minus 200 might be the biggest that you see. I mean, and like I said, she's just leaps and bounds away from everyone else. No one's even close. But, I mean, somebody's got to be coming up that can compete with it, though. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just looking at, like, the past line she's had. She is a bigger favorite in this fight than she was against Jessica Ai. But not as big of a favorite as she was against Jennifer Maia. She's a minus 2,500 favorite against Jennifer Maia. And there you go. So we'll see what happens there. I'm going to say this.
That's about right, honestly.
I am not going to come out here and say Lauren Murphy's going to win on Saturday. But I've been saying for a while, and I said it on the show when this fight was made, Lauren has a style that can make things at least somewhat interesting, like sort of Rocky Apollo Creed-esque, where Lauren can just take a ton of punishment and make it a dogfight and make it gritty and dirty. And she's very tough to put away. In fact, she's never been put away in a fight. And I understand that Shevchenko is on a much different level. So I do think this is going to be one of those fights where she's probably not going to win, but I think her stock, I think the respect for Murphy will rise with a gutsy showing. So that's what I think is going to happen. Obviously I'm going to lead towards Shevchenko, but I think Lauren's going to get in there and get gritty. And I think people are going to be like, you know, good effort. Good effort. We dig it.
I hope so. I hope you're right. The better fight on the card.
nonsense. What's that?
This probably has heaters.
I think this could be one of the better fights on the card. I think this fight, if it plays out the way I think it will, I think it could end up being like a really, really good fight where Lauren Murphy gets beaten and maybe gets something off at the end. I don't know. I'm hopeful.
Man, I gotta think about this point for round two now, because you know we're talking about stocks here. We're gonna talk about a different fighter stock and see where he goes after this past weekend. But let's award the point for round two, and it goes to I gotta go with the driver of the Chevy truck. Jed Meshew has tied things up. It is 1-1.
We earned it. I'm not excited about our next topic.
I know this is a Cody point written all over it. So my child has decided that he's not going to listen to me. So I'm not going to discipline him live on the air right now. But you best believe I'm about to be muting this microphone in a moment. But so let's talk about this past weekend.
So it's fine.
I'm starting to boil right now. But great win for Anthony Smith over Ryan Spann. We had some great performances coming out of UFC Vegas 37. But I'll talk about Bellator 266. And let's talk about the Bellator debut of Yoel Romero. First off, and I've said this a million times, and I know I am not on an island here, the matchmaking was horrendous. I think we can all agree on that. Phil Davis is not the kind of opponent that will make Yoel Romero shine. I gave Phil all three rounds rather easily. Jaron Vallil, I don't know what friggin' fight he was watching, but here we are. Davis wins. Romero's now 0-1 in Bellator. Now what, Cody Stamann? What do we do with Yoel Romero right now?
I 100% agree. That should not have been his first fight in Bellator. I mean, when you think Yoel Romero, you want to see him fight someone who is absolutely terrified of him and doesn't know how to wrestle, so that way he can just do all the crazy freak shit that he is able to do. That fight for me was a killer, because I'm a huge Romero fan. Like, I love watching that guy, and he's actually a super nice guy. I've met him a few times. He's very soft-spoken, nice dude. I don't know what he does from here. I mean, I think that you could definitely put him in another huge matchup against another top contender in Bellator, and that fight would still sell and people would still want to see it, and I think he could still win. But that's just poor matchmaking on Bellator's part. That should not have been the first fight, and it kind of takes a shit on his stock, because you know Phil isn't a guy that we've necessarily heard a lot about lately.
Jed, like you mentioned, I know this is a tough topic for you. We know how you view Yoel Romero. You have said many times he's the best middleweight in the world, and who knows? He just fought. So in the rules of the MMA fighting global rankings, maybe he still is. You could rank him number one at middleweight, because this fight was at 205. So technically, maybe he still is the best middleweight in the world. But we all know Bellator could have booked this debut way better in pretty much everybody's eyes. But how do we right this ship with the Soldier of God and get him moving forward after this loss to Phil Davis?
I think the easiest way to do it is to get Jaron Vallil to be the only judge for all of his fights moving forward. I love you, Jaron Vallil. I have nothing but respect for that scorecard. That was the scorecard of my heart. Maybe not of my head, but it was certainly the scorecard of my heart. Look, it's really easy. This was awful. We talked about it the other week. It's horrendous matchmaking. But fortunately, it's fine. One, Bellator is on Showtime and no one has or watches Showtime. So really, nobody even knows that Yoel lost, unless you went to MMAfighting.com to watch our coverage, which you should have, because you shouldn't have watched the rest of that card. But, you know, it's fine. You just – and I think Scott Coker's going to do it anyway. You just – have him fight Gegard Mousasi. Like, I know Yoel's at 205-ish now. You just make him fight a middleweight. Give him a towel. Maybe he can DC his way through the weight cut. It'll be fine. And you squeeze the juice for all you can get out of it. Most of his fights are going to be awful, or there's going to be one big cool thing, and you just hope that there are a number of those. But, yeah, just put him in against Mousasi. Like, have Jaron Vallil be one of the judges, certainly. We just put him in against Mousasi, and then, I don't know, Machida, Yeah, have him fight. He can rematch Machida or whatever. Just do anything with him. It doesn't matter. I'm going to tune in to watch. I'll watch the rest of the crap, but I'll absolutely watch Yoel stand aimlessly across the cage at somebody and then maybe do a cool thing. The one thing I will say, because my mom raised me, when you're wrong, you just hand up. I was wrong. And I was wrong because this fight was bad, but it was way less bad than I thought it was going to be, man. I thought this was going to be terrible. But credit to Phil Davis. He didn't be the most boring fighter of all time, which he has been prone to do in his career. And he totally could have just kept leg kicking Yoel from halfway across the cage, but he didn't. He mixed it in. He got some takedowns. He made it way more fun than that fight should have been on paper. So credit to Phil Davis. I love you forever, Yoel. You will always be my top middleweight in the world because you beat Israel Adesanya and you beat Bobby Knuckles twice. So you're the greatest middleweight. That's where I'm at.
All right. So I have to bring this up because Casey's the producer, and you can tell because you saw the comments going across the screen, because if there's any man stock who rose more than anybody is this past weekend, it is Big Tuna, Ben Parrish, who kicked off the main card with one of the biggest upsets in Bellator history. And we're all in agreement. Like, just throw Yoel in there with Big Tuna and everybody wins. Like, if Big Tuna wins, great. If Yoel wins, like, he'd be heavily favored to do so. It'd be kind of a fight where
I'm not comfortable having Yoel lose to a dude named Big Tuna. That's I got too much love in my heart for Yoel to lose to some guy named Big Tuna. Even though he was great on your show, Mike, Ben Parrish was fantastic on your show. Shameless plug, we got next. Go listen to it on the MMA Fighting Podcast Network. I'm so good at my job.
You can watch that interview as well. It's better in video form, I gotta tell you. It's like, you want to get to know Big Tuna, you get to know all about Big Tuna. So last thing on this, Jed, you mentioned it, and Scott Coker did as well. He said, you know what? He lost tonight, but we could just throw him into a middleweight title fight. We got Musasi and Austin Vanderford getting ready to fight. I believe they're targeting that one for January from all indications. That has not been announced, but that seems to be the direction this is heading. What are the chances Bellator just pulls the trigger on this, Jed, and just throws him in against the winner of that fight? Because who else is there at 185 right now? Like, who else, like, outside of Vanderford, like, who else is really there right now? Because I don't see Musasi sticking around. Once that Grand Prix ends, I could see Musasi, if he beats Austin, jumping back up to 205 and trying to be a champ. Your thoughts on whether the chances Bellator pulls the trigger on giving Romero a middleweight title fight for his next fight?
95%. There's nobody else. Like, there's just nobody else. Coker's already said it. Like, as long as Yoel says, yeah, I'm down, which I assume he would, like, why not get a title fight if you just can? So 95% at least. It might be
where low. Where are you at, Cody? Are you above or below 95% on this?
I bet my house that's the next fight.
So above or below? I don't know what kind of a gambler you are, Cody. Maybe you're just a real risky guy, and you do that for 20% chance.
I don't see another option for Bellator. Like, I don't. I mean, the guy that Musasi's fighting, I've never even heard of him. So, I don't watch Bellator. I don't like you said, Jed. I don't even know what the fuck Showtime is or how to watch it. So.
No one watches Bellator. Right?
And that's about it.
Oh, man. Poor Bellator. Sorry.
I like Cody. Can we bring him back a lot?
Talk about – Jen, you might have a new tag team party. You might have to kick Nanda to the
– I feel great about
this. We're just going to talk shit about everything MMA. We could be here all day.
This is the perfect platform for Cody Stamann. So, really, all right. So that is the Bellator portion of the program. We head to the final question of regulation. The point for round three goes to Jed Meshew. It's 2-1. 2-1. I feel like Cody was at a little bit of a disadvantage there, but it is what it is. He knew what happened with the Yoel fight. It's just Bellator.
I have a long history with Yoel, so it's tough.
It is very tough.
I watched two 15-second clips on Instagram, so I pretty much saw the whole fight.
Yeah, actually, covered you. You could have just gone to MMAfighting.com, and they would have told you everything you needed to know about the fight. Do that next time.
Next time. Next time I will do that.
Judd just plugging away. Mike. You sure are. You sure are, Judd. But so we had some I definitely want to discuss this because we had some big news this past week. First, we found out that former flyweight title challenger Joseph Benavidez has retired from the sport. His wife, Megan Levy, first posted it on Twitter. And good on him. What a career that man had. And then we found out not long after that that the natural-born killer, Carlos Condit, announced his retirement as well. And that just kind of set off a slew of retirements because we found out Luke Sanders retired. Then we found out Matt Bissett retired. And we got all these retirements going on. But those are the two I really want to talk about. Jed, we will begin with you here. What was your reaction to not only Joseph Benavidez retiring, but then Carlos Condit, not far behind, announcing his retirement as well?
That was sad. Not because it's bad. It's like really great. I want to be clear. I wasn't sad about Joseph Benavidez. I have a lot of respect for Joe B. I think he just is criminally underrated. I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. Because in a world where Demetrius Johnson didn't exist, Joe B would be the greatest flyweight champion and in the kind of GOAT conversation for what he was able to accomplish in his career. Unfortunately, Mighty Mouse exists, and that's happened throughout history with some other people, and it's a tough spot to be in. But I was never like a big Joe B fan. I think the biggest time I was a fan was when he was fighting Dominic Cruz in WEC, because I do not like Dominic Cruz. But other than that, I just had respect for his skills. He seems like a solid dude, like a stand-up guy and really good fighter. But I didn't have an emotional attachment to him. Carlos Condit is one of, if not my favorite fighter of all time. I think he's probably number two or three. And for my money, and I have had this argument with many people on our site and elsewhere, his fight with Robbie Lawler is the best fight that has ever happened in the history of humanity. And I've never felt more things watching a fight than watching that one. And that came after I already had a pretty big emotional attachment to Carlos Condit's career. Like, he is everything you want from a fighter. He is incredible. So I wrote about this on the site last week. I don't think his career gets put in context enough either, because he fought at a time when like welterweight was filled with top position wrestlers more so than it's ever been. And it was the division of those. So like the maximum apex of NCAA top position wrestlers, and Carlos Condit can't defend a takedown from me. Like, and it didn't matter because he was just so freaking violent. Like he didn't respond to all of this by being, I'm going to learn takedown events. He's just like, I'm just going to be way more violent than the rest of these dudes. And he won an interim championship off it and damn near unseated the actual GOAT. Like, Carlos Condit's a bad dude and an awesome dude. And I am sad that he will not be fighting anymore. I think it's a right decision for him. But one of the low key things that I've enjoyed the past few years is I thought Carlos was done a few years ago, and he managed to put together some good wins and fun fights over the last couple of years. And that was awesome. And I will remember his career fondly, and he will be enshrined in the Hall of Fame soon, and he deserves it. Dude is a hero.
Cody, your thoughts on these two retirements? I know you're very fond of the lighter weight classes, so I'm sure you probably look at Joe B's career more fondly than maybe Jed does, but just, you know, different strokes for different folks. And then obviously Carlos Condit has been doing the damn thing for a long time. He's a guy that, you know, one of the first fighters when I was getting into the sport, just flipping through the channel, saw WEC and saw Carlos Condit getting introduced by Joe Martinez, and I'm like, that dude's about that life. Like, you could just look in his eyes, you could tell that dude is about that life. And immediately I was like hooked on, I was very intrigued by Carlos Condit. But once you find out that these two guys have made the decision to turn to the next chapter of their lives, what was your reaction and your thoughts on those two guys as fighters?
You know, I'm happy for both of them. Cause I mean, you got to know these guys from WEC, and that was a long, long time ago. They've been at the pinnacle of the sport for a really long time. But I'm going to go the other way. I mean, Joe Benavidez is a really good friend of mine. He's someone who I've learned a lot from. And just the fact that, you know, you know, I got to know him like when I moved out here towards the end of his career. But Joe is like one of those guys that just does everything right. He lives a very healthy lifestyle. He's a good person. You know what I mean? If someone came up to Joe that couldn't do anything for Joe, Joe would be nice to him just because that's who he is. And, you know, he's like, it doesn't make sense that he fights because he's like such a genuinely nice person. And then he gets in the cage and I've been in the room with him. I've gone to fights with him, and like he turns into like a different human, and he is just a violent, violent dude in the cage. And you know, he survived in at the very, very top, the pinnacle of, you know, an insanely tough weight class. And you know, like you said, if Mighty Mouse didn't exist, Joe Benavidez is an 8-time UFC champion. So I mean, and you know, fighting Mighty Mouse the first time, I honestly thought, you know, I thought Joe won that fight, you know, and then it was like every single time somebody was going to make a title run or, you know, they started to have some success in the division, like they had to go through Joe, and then Joe beat him, and then Joe got another title shot. And he did that continuously, you know, throughout his career. And, you know, he's just a great example of you know, what a fighter should be in and outside the cage. So I'm super happy for Joe. And yeah. The guy's a fucking legend. I love him.
Well said. Well said. Yeah, the capacity crowd has reacted. I mean, Jed, you had a great answer, but you didn't get a standing ovation from the live studio audience.
I can't argue it.
So, with that being said, and the resounding applause, we don't even need a drum roll here because we already know where this is going. Cody Stamann has tied things up. It is 2-2. That's right. Play the victor music. And that means to the knockout round. We go to the knockout round to break the tie. The knockout round, Cody Stamann. So what's going to happen here is I'm going to ask one question to each of these gentlemen. They have no idea what this question is. And they will each have 60 seconds to give their response. Once they give their response, with the help of the live studio audience commenting and watching the program alongside with us, we will turn it on over to the judge, the jury, the executive producer, E. Casey Lydon, who will render the final decision. There he is, right there, pointing at you, baddest stash in the game. So, Jed Meshew, you don't get any money for all these title defenses, but you do get the champion's prerogative coming off of a win. So I assume I know what you're doing with this, but maybe you know where I'm going with this question and you want to jump out the gates and make a statement. What do you want to do? You want to go first or pass it on to Cody?
The problem is I have no idea where you're going because there's like a lot of shit that's happened this week. So this could be any number of topics. So I'm gonna exercise my prerogative. I'm going to pass it over to my opponent who has earned my respect.
Well, that's good.
I just hope I know it's the fighter that you're talking about.
Don't worry, Cody. We're going to make... We are going to ask a very popular question on the show. And when we break down pay-per-views, there's always one question we asked. And I didn't ask it this time around. So we're going to go ahead and ask it right now for the knockout round. So we like to talk about the big fights for these pay-per-views. UFC 266 coming up on Saturday. We talked about the 3-5 rounders. We talked about the title fights. Talked about Nick Diaz versus Robbie Lawler 2. Of course, we got Curtis Blaydes versus Jarzynia Rozenstruik. We got Jessica Andrade versus Cynthia Calvillo. That is the main card. Well, we got a whole bunch of other fights after that and some very compelling fights that are not getting enough attention, that are not getting the love that maybe they deserve, but they're just on a loaded card right now. So the question for you in 1 minute or less, Cody Stamann, what is the low-key banger at UFC 266, the under-the-radar fight that you got circled on your fight card that not a lot of people are talking about but should be? 1 minute on the clock. Your time starts now.
So I'm going to go with it. Can I pick a main card fight that I think is going to be a banger that I don't think anyone – I think Shevchenko and Murphy are going to have an absolute banger. I think that Murphy is going to be able to walk through all the initial shots early, and I think it's going to be, like someone said earlier, it's going to be like a Rocky Apollo Creed thing where she gets absolutely demolished for 2.5 rounds and then starts finding success later in the fight, and it's one of those fights where – I think a lot of people at the end are going to be rooting for the underdog. I don't think that she will win, but I think that this will honestly be one of the best matchups Shevchenko's had to kind of show every single amount of skill. And I think that Lauren Murphy's stock will go up exponentially after this fight. And a lot more people will know who she is and look forward to her upcoming fights.
All right, with a few seconds to spare, I mean, listen, the question is low-key banger, and if we're talking about this card, we're talking about the three main fights. I mean, it doesn't get more low-key from people's positions and how they're viewing the card than this freaking fight. I mean, than that freaking fight. Most people,
very low-key choice.
I don't know, nobody is talking about it, though, so that's fair.
I mean, by definition, yeah. That is true. So
it's on the poster. Jed Meshew,
we turn on over to the champ. You got a lot of options to choose from here. I'm trying to just take a look. All right, I think I know where you're going, but maybe I'm wrong. 1 minute on the clock. Low-key banger. UFC 266 this Saturday. Your time starts now.
Originally, when I thought this question was going to happen, I was going to go Hook or Hokbarast, but with all the craziness that's going on there, that's no longer low-key. It's like the second biggest story of the week. And I know you think where I'm going, Shamil Abdurakhimov versus Chris Daukaus, because the big beefy boys slapping meat against each other is always for a good time, but that's not it. Uros Medic versus Jalen Turner. I butchered both of those, and I'm sorry about it. I'm not a names guy, but I am a this fight guy. Because one, lightweight, best division in the sport. Sorry, Casey, I know you'll vote against me just for saying that. But Uros Medic has two fights in the UFC one was Contender Series. But his UFC debut was a flying knee in the first round, which is awesome. And Jalen Turner has never been in a boring fight, basically. They both just are going to come out throwing hands until one dude falls over. And it's the definition of a banger. Like, this is going to be a really good all offense fight, and nobody's talking about it. Easily my banger of the week.
All right. Some good fights. Of course, Marais Tavalishvili is interesting. Hooker Hakparast, Modafari Santos. That's a good one. A couple of debutants coming up. Nick Maximoff taking on Cody Brundage, who's making his UFC debut. That's a big deal. Good on Cody for getting the call. Matt Semelsberger versus Martin Sano. Sano making his debut, and then Omar Morales versus Jonathan Pierce should be fireworks.
Kid's from Michigan, and he lost his Contender Series spot, and now he's in the UFC. It's amazing.
Yeah,
what a turn!
Isn't life grand? Absolutely. He was about to fight on the Contender Series Tuesday, so I think it worked out for him. Just have to be in the right place at the right time.
Announced for this fight like yesterday.
Yes.
Like, literally, didn't he sign in this fight, like, yesterday?
Yesterday. And here we are. So there we go. Casey, you have heard the arguments, my friend. But we're gonna let the peeps kind of get it rolling in the comments and just let you know what's going to be coming up, of course, here on MMA Fighting. Tomorrow, I know Alex K. Lee is probably sleeping right now because no one loves a good weigh-in more than Alex K. Lee. So the weigh-in show, we'll have that ready. Jose, of course, is in Las Vegas right now. On the red carpet for the UFC Hall of Fame ceremony. So I believe he just talked to Dustin Poirier and some other interviews. So stay tuned on the YouTube page for all of those. Plus, we'll have your weigh-in show tomorrow, noon Eastern time. Drama on the scales. So we'll see what happens. There always is drama at some point. So we'll walk you through that.
Will Nick Diaz show up?
That's a big question. That's a great question. Well, preview show tomorrow. I'm not really sure when that's going to happen, but that's coming.
I think he can leave.
He can't leave, yes. But maybe he just won't leave his hotel room.
Yeah, he's just going to stay in the hotel.
Noon Eastern tomorrow. Watch the drama unfold. Will Nick Diaz be at the weigh-in? I think he will be. I think he'll probably be like the first freaking person of the scale and just stop the drama right away. Preview show, and then Saturday, we'll have your pre-fight show 30 minutes beforehand, answering all your questions, and then we'll have the press conference, we'll have post-fight show, all sorts of coverage to get you through Saturday as well. So Casey, I think we've given you enough time to let the votes compile. You heard the arguments, the low-key bangers. Who wins? Who is the BTL champion on this return back to the video screen?
We got some votes in. Let me see. Ooh. All right.
But before you give your judgment, Jed, how are you feeling right now? Because you've been on a roll now that Casey has not been judging You even got a Sean Alshadi vote, which is, I mean, it just shows what kind of role you're on right now.
I was plumb surprised that I got the Sean vote. Yeah, I'm happy to be back doing it live. It's way more fun doing it live. And Cody's actually been awesome. I had no idea how he's going to do, but he killed it. And so I got a lot of respect for Cody now.
Well, thanks. I had no idea what I was going to do either.
No, you did great. I just hope that I still get to keep my title because it's the only title I get. And Cody's going to be fighting for real belts. And so, you know, I need this.
I hope you win too.
Well,
oh, this is so great. Casey, I don't even want to announce. Can we have a draw?
Oh.
Go ahead.
I've given out draws already, but not today. Today there's a winner.
Ooh.
And today, Hope dies, Jed loses, and new Cody Stamen.
Wow! Cody Stamen is the champion. He comes
on. Sorry,
he has no idea what's happening.
He sold me on the main. He sold me on that Murphy fight. He sold me. I was like, I predicted Murphy get her butt kicked, but you know what? I am now hyped for it. I think it's going to be a good fight now, and Cody sold it. And Jed was way off. The best division in all of MMA is the men's bantamweight division. Everyone knows that. So, congratulations,
Jed
gentlemen.
Had the wherewithal. He knew that was going to make the episode.
I knew exactly what was going to happen when I said that.
Yeah, right. When you have to apologize in your answer already. So yeah, you lost cause. Congratulations, Mr. Stamen.
Well, I think Jed's going to be busy the next few weeks anyway, so I think him not being the champion will give some room for some emerging contenders down the road. But we have a new champion. His name is Cody Stamen. Cody, unfortunately, you don't get any money. You don't get a championship belt, but we do give you 30 seconds to talk about whatever it is you want to talk about. Good, bad, indifferent, MMA, non-MMA. You want to plug some stuff? The floor is yours.
Well, I am deeply honored to be the champion today. I got to say that. I really needed this. thanks for having me, you guys. This was a lot of fun. If you ever need someone to absolutely rail everyone in MMA, I am your guy. I live for it. So I'll see you again.
Yes, and I will be bugging the legendary Ed Kapp to try to get you back on next week to defend your newly won title. We'll see if schedules will align. Jed, of course, I mean, an incredible run. And it has come to an end this time, but that's okay. Even Ric Flair won world titles 16 different times, but he had to lose 15 along the way or 16 along the way, and he's still considered one of the greatest of all time. So how do you feel about the decision and what happened and what transpired today?
Not sure I'm stoked on the Ric Flair comparison given current events, but we're going to breeze right past that and say,
My bad.
I have nothing but respect for Cody Stamen. Which I didn't know if I'd have respect for him. So well done, sir. I do have a problem with you. When you win the actual UFC belt, your post-fight speech needs to be a lot better than the one you just offered. So we can work on that, though, buddy. We can take some classes. We'll workshop some things.
I got time to make some changes.
Be a little sharper, because if you're talking to Rogan and that's what you offer up, that's not going to do it for anybody, man.
I 100% agree. That's the worst speech I've ever given. It was supposed to be, though.
That's all right. Jed, I'm gonna strike the first name, John Cena, also 16-time world champion. I think he's hustle-loyal from respect. Yeah, you can't see me, all that stuff. So, yes, I forgot all about that. I haven't watched Dark Side yet. I did hear about it, but, yeah, bad comparison.
I don't watch pro wrestling, but that has just been all over my Twitter feed. So I know I was like, that's not the... That's not the one to go with, Mike.
My apologies. Current events. I'm a classic wrestling fan.
I letting Casey back in the booth. I was on a heater until he judged. Now, coincidence? I don't know. Just saying.
If you just mentioned Big Tuna in the last segment, you probably would have won, but it is what it is. But thank you all. It's good to be back live, doing it in front of the camera. Hopefully we could do this again. We could do more so moving forward. If not, you still get us on the podcast network, and the show hasn't gone anywhere, nor will it. So In the meantime, enjoy the rest of Fight Week. Enjoy UFC 266. Props to Jose Youngs in Las Vegas doing the damn thing. For the new champion, Cody Stamann, Jed Meshew, I am Mike Heck. Thank you once again for watching. We'll see you back once again next week, Between the Links. Good night, everybody.
This has been Between the Links. Wait, hold on, Cody. We're not done yet. Oh, Cody's gone. Oh, man. Oh, Mr. Lin. Oh, no. Is Cody okay? Bye.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.